Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Piano keys and pool balls seem harmless enough, but of course, some of them are made with ivory. And the ivory trade has been devastating to wild elephants and rhinos. So now a bill on Beacon Hill seeks to ban all ivory sales in Massachusetts.
New ivory sales were banned under federal law over a decade ago. And last summer, President Obama announced his intention to make it even harder to import illegally.
We're proposing a new rule that bans the sale of virtually all ivory across our state lines, which will eliminate the market for illegal ivory in the United States.
But right now, the sale of antique ivory is still permitted, and advocates of the ban say those sales can actually cover up illegal imports. So here to talk more about this is Laura Hagen. She is Deputy Director of Advocacy at the Massachusetts Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So before we talk about this bill that's pending on Beacon Hill, can you give us a sense as to how large the ivory trade or sales of ivory are in Boston or Massachusetts?
Absolutely. It's important to note that the U.S. is one of the major ivory markets worldwide. China is absolutely first, but the U.S. ranks top amongst nations in ivory sales. There have been a number of different studies, one in 2007 that placed the Boston and Cambridge market as the seventh largest nationally. And most recently this summer, the International Fund for Animal Welfare did a study on Craigslist where they looked at ivory and elephant-related parts that were being sold on the different Craigslist markets across the country. And Boston's Craigslist actually ranked fourth. They looked at a mere five-day snapshot and found $170,000 worth of sales. And each of these sales, it's important to note, were unregulated, undocumented, and didn't have any of the required provenance that our U.S. government already currently requires.
Yeah. So, I mean, the accuracy of a Craigslist survey aside, I mean, it is possible that this might even be an underestimate of how much ivory is moving around in the state?
Absolutely. Ivory is, you know, anytime that you're trying to quantify a black market, it's difficult. And that we don't have any quantities, you know, we don't have a tracking system in the U.S. to track legal ivory, let alone illegal ivory. You know, our federal U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has been quoted as saying that there are illegal wildlife products coming into the United States every hour of every day. Mm. If that gives you some sense of, you know, how our borders are somewhat like sieves right now, because there's a real enforcement issue federally.
So let's talk about that in terms of the impact that the enforcement issues, both in the United States and just the existence of the China market, have had recently on elephant and rhino populations. I mean, what has the impact been?
Absolutely. Between 2010 and 2012, estimates place about 100,000 elephants that were killed for their ivory, that were poached for their ivory. That, on average, if you average it out, is about one every 15 minutes. So in the length of your show today, on average, four elephants will have died for their ivory. Mm. If you look at the numbers, it's astounding. And, you know, there used to be millions of elephants that roamed the earth. And right now, whole population estimates are at about 500,000. So if you think of that 100,000 number in context of 500,000.
It's enormous.
Yeah. And so, you know, elephants and rhinos are very slow, have very slow gestation periods.
Two years for elephants.
And then they have to wait a number of years between calving. And so as we are decimating these populations, and we are not only killing the males, we're killing the females and often mothers that have you know, small calves who are then left abandoned and often die.
Right.
We're at a tipping point where the population simply cannot reproduce at a rate fast enough to recover.
And then there's also the issue as to where some of the money in the ivory trade is being used for in terms of funding wars and conflicts in Africa itself. So, I mean, it's a very complicated global issue. So what does this bill here in Massachusetts then truly seek to do?
Sure. Well, so as the segment you played from President Obama announcing the proposed new federal regulations that would close the federal ivory trade, you know, that was really exciting news. But the problem is that the federal regulations can only touch interstate commerce, so commerce between the states. The other problem is that the new proposed federal regulations still maintain loopholes. So there are still going to be sales allowed for the antiques market. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has said time and time again that is the legal trade in the U.S. that is serving as cover for the illegal trade. So we still have loopholes that the state can play a role in closing. And the state can address the sales within a state, which the federal government really can't regulate.
Okay. But what about then, you know, for completely above board, legitimate, you know, antiques dealers or families who say, I've had this peace in my family for several generations, but we don't want it anymore. We want to sell it. I mean, would it shut them down or their opportunities?
Right. So the bill would not prohibit possession at all. So, you know, no one's going to be going in and taking anyone's ivory, but it would absolutely limit the trade. And that's because, you know, studies have found that it is the demand and the trade that is driving the poaching that's going on across the world. And, you know, will a ban in Massachusetts solve every problem? No. But we are certainly a part of the problem. And so we do have a role to play in closing our markets, just as New Jersey and New York and most recently California just did earlier this month.
Mm. But I mean, how many states would have to do this for it to be a truly sort of effective, like making a dent in the trade?
Well, you know,
because I guess I'm coming back to, I'm reflecting what you just said, like, you know, it's all well and good for us to do this here in Massachusetts, but $170,000 of sales versus the global multi-million dollar ivory market seems to be a tiny fraction.
Well, I think there's two answers to that question. I think that it is, we are all a part of a whole, right? And so we can address, our state lawmakers can address the sales that are going on here in Massachusetts. And making a sales or a trade ban makes enforcement easier, both for our federal law enforcement and for our state law enforcement. It's extraordinarily difficult, virtually impossible to tell ivory, legal ivory from illegal ivory on its face when you're looking at a piece. And so it makes our law enforcement's job easier. You know, I was fortunate enough to go to the Ivory Crush that was held in New York City earlier this year. And I talked to the law enforcement officials there, and they passed their ban last year, and they've been saying, yes, enforcement is easier. The other piece is that we lead by example. The U.S. and China have said, we agree to shut down the ivory trade, and we, the U.S. and Massachusetts, need to lead by example and shut down our trade here.
Well, Laura Hagen is the Deputy Director of Advocacy at the Massachusetts Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, talking to us about a bill pending on Beacon Hill about banning ivory sales in Massachusetts. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.